Brain Revisited, the neuroscience of parenting. I'm your host, Dr. Jody Paluski.
Today, it's my pleasure to have Winnie Orchard, a PhD candidate at the Turner Institute for Brain and Mental Health and Monash Biomedical Imaging at Monash University in Melbourne, Australia, here with us. Her research focuses on parenthood and the aging brain, and she works under the supervision of Shauna Jamada. Welcome, Winnie. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jody.
Yeah. Really excited to talk to you today about your research because I saw your paper out recently. Congratulations.
Thank you.
But I've been following it because I think it's the first work looking at how long parenthood might impact a parent's brain. So this is going to be really fun, I think, to talk about it.
Yeah, it'll be good.
Yeah. So first off, maybe you can tell me why you're interested in studying the parental brain in general.
Yeah, sure. So in my undergrad course, I did a literature review on postnatal depression, and it was the first sort of insight into just how vulnerable the peripartum period is and how much it changes sort of every aspect of your life. And then later in my honours and as a research assistant, I fell in love with MRI and with neuroscience. I just thought it was so cool. And then decided to do a PhD just as Elselina's Nature Neuroscience paper came out. And just as I was sort of designing this topic, I realized I could merge these two passions and investigate the brain changes in this really impactful and understudied area.
Yeah, excellent. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about your research then.
Yeah. So I have done two studies so far looking at the aging parental brain and how the brain changes in pregnancy and the postpartum, how they last across the lifespan and what they're doing to the structure and the function of the human brain in late life.
Okay. So now, you mentioned you have two papers, both really recent.
Yes.
Super recent. Yeah, so that's great. And I know I've seen your one that came out in PLOS One, mm-hmm. looking at parenting and the brain in aging parents. So I'm wondering mm-hmm. if you could just tell us, kind of walk us through it or even walk us through both of them.
Yeah. So I suppose I started this research because we already know that the parental brain changes in response to pregnancy and parenthood, but we didn't know how long these changes lasted. And we know from rodents that these changes are sort of permanent and indeed are beneficial for learning and memory. So I wanted to find out if having children might also be a protective advantage in late life for humans, like it is in rodents.
Yeah.
So we were fortunate enough to have access to a really large data set, so 500 healthy older adults in their 70s and 80s. So this was part of the ASPRE data study, which was collected to investigate effects of aspirin on brain health outcomes. So it wasn't collected in intending to study effects of parenthood, but we got to look at it and to see what the effect of number of children that a person has parented, how that affects brain structure and later on brain function.
That's really great. And as you mentioned, like the rodent literature, which is where I come from, has shown for some time that later in life, rodent moms are usually better at a lot of learning and memory tasks. But then we really don't have any data on this in women. So women often complain.
It's a total mismatch. Yeah.
Because we don't have so much data in women in terms of memory anyway during pregnancy and the postpartum period.
Yeah.
We could use more. But yeah, we know nothing about as the kids are growing up and, of course, well into later life. So this is great.
Yeah, and particularly for cognition, the literature is focused so strongly on pregnancy and then the first couple of years postpartum. But beyond that, it just falls off. There's like a cliff after 2 years that it just isn't there.
Yeah, and I think there's only, what, one study that looked at memory 2 years on in women? So it's not like we have like thousands, hundreds or thousands of papers even looking at this topic.
It's a small handful.
And I was thinking about this the other day because I was thinking, you know, I think if you look at memory changes, complained memory changes at other times in life or in relation, let's say, to aging, of course, there's thousands of research topics on this, but research studies on this and topics. But then if you look at pregnancy and postpartum or parenting, and 50 to 80% of women will say they feel like they have a change in their memory.
Yeah.
And 80% of women on average get pregnant globally, but we have only, I don't even think there's 100 research papers in women looking at memory changes during pregnancy and the postpartum period.
Yep.
So,
and even then it's just forgotten. It's like, what happens next? You know, does it bounce back? Does it continue that bounce and actually enhance?
We don't know. So this is where your research comes in. So we should probably talk about that. So now you were looking at what I also really loved about your research, because a lot of the memory work in pregnancy and the postpartum just looks at memory. And I think there's only one study that's published that looks at some sort of brain change. But you also were able to look at changes in the brain in relation to number of kids and memory. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I think it's really important that we do blend the two, and that, you know, if we're trying to interpret a brain change, then it's really nice to have cognitive data from the same group and vice versa. You know, it's hard to say, oh, the cognition is changing, so the brain must be changing. But it's lovely to be able to show those two results side by side. So, yeah, that's what we were able to do. So we had this brain data from elderly men and women, and compared the brain structure between women and men with one child to those who have no children. And we also looked at the relationship between the number of children a parent has and their brain structure in late life.
And so can you tell me a little bit about which brain structures you were looking at?
Yeah, so we actually did a whole brain approach. So we took 70 different brain regions from across the brain. So basically spanning everything. We didn't decide to pick and choose where we were looking. And that's mostly because no one had ever looked beyond the postpartum period. So we didn't want to limit our search just to what we see in pregnancy or in the postpartum, in case we'd just miss something that was unique to late life parenthood.
Okay. So then you just looked at, 70 areas. So that's a lot.
Yes, it is.
So tell me also maybe about the memory changes you looked at.
Yeah, so we saw a relationship between verbal memory and the number of children a woman has parented. And in the direction that most people are surprised about. So we actually found a small but reliable improvements in verbal memory performance with more children. So, strange. I'm not surprised, but many people are.
Yeah, so the more children you have, the better your verbal memory in aging, when you're aging.
Yeah, exactly, which is strange, because often, anecdotally at least, women will say that their verbal memory is an area that they feel is most impaired, particularly in pregnancy. You know, you hear people say, I just don't have my words, this idea of baby brain. So when I tell people about this result, people are often quite surprised, like, oh, improved.
Oh. Yeah. So I'm now thinking of my good friend who has 7 children, and I'm thinking, wow, okay, it's going to be great when she's older.
Yeah, basically.
And I only have 2. So it's not going to work out as well. Oh, well. So you found this effect with memory, but can you tell me then about the brain changes?
Yeah, absolutely. So we compared mothers with one child to mothers with no children and found that the mothers had thinner and dorsolateral prefrontal cortices. So the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex is generally regarded to be involved with higher order functioning. So executive function, cognitive control, emotional regulation. And the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex is, you know, implicated in parental behavior and activated in almost every fMRI study of human mothers' responses to their infants. So it's looking like a maternal area.
Yeah, definitely.
And in fathers, fathers to one child showed differences in social and affective areas. So a thicker temporal pole and a thinner anterior cingulate cortex. So these regions are more involved in social cognition, including emotional regulation, empathy, and theory of mind.
Oh, interesting.
And then our mothers with multiple children showed a relationship with the parahippocampal gyrus. So it actually got thicker the more children that you have. And this is a particularly interesting result given our cognitive results as well, because the parahippocampal gyrus is implicated in memory consolidation and cohesion, and atrophy or a thinning of the parahippocampal gyrus is related to age-related memory decline. So we actually see the opposite of that pattern in a thicker parahippocampal gyrus and better memory.
Wow. So that's really cool. I mean, so you see not only a sex difference, but you also see this link with this increased memory with the hippocampus, which of course, you know, the hippocampus or the parahippocampal gyrus, this brain area is really important for memory.
Yeah, so that's fascinating. It came out really neatly, which is lovely. And also interesting that we see a result in fathers from no children to one child, but we don't see a relationship with increasing number of children for dads. So it might be, particularly in this older generational cohort, that the experiential or environmental impact of parenthood with a greater change between no children to one child than each additional child.
Oh, I see. Yeah. And I think the culture of the parenting, the primary caregiver, secondary caregiver type of thing, maybe that's playing a role as well.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And it would be really interesting to, you know, redo this study in, you know, 40 years, 50 years with a generation of perhaps more equal caregiving responsibility balance between mothers and fathers and see whether we are talking about a sex difference, you know, mothers versus fathers, or whether what we're talking about is actually a primary care, secondary care difference, you know, scaling with time spent in care rather than parental sex.
Yeah, interesting. Now, I want to go back to the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex in the moms, in these moms when they're like 70, you said that there was a thinning of the cortical thickness.
Yes.
So, I mean, I think we've also seen before that parenting, what we have seen before, I should say, that pregnancy and the postpartum, there is a thinning or a volume decrease, and in animal models, a decrease in neurogenesis with motherhood. So I find this intriguing that you see this thinning, which we always associate with a bad thing, as being persistent across the lifespan.
Yeah, I think it's so easy to think of it as more brain is better.
Yeah.
But we know that that's not strictly true. I mean, in an aging context, we do consider a thinning gray matter as atrophy or as cell loss. But in the parenthood space, we very much talk about, I mean, particularly in pregnancy, reduced gray matter is interpreted as a process of fine tuning, like what mm-hmm. we see in puberty, mm-hmm. that it's streamlining to make the brain more efficient, and that, you know, a decrease in volume or in thickness doesn't mean a decrease in activation.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely agree. So less is more often when it comes to our brains. It's about function, not necessarily structure.
Yeah, so, doing more with less. It's increased efficiency.
Yeah, definitely. So, and remind me, did you also see a thinning in those social brain areas as well in the dads? Was it a thinning?
Yes and no. So we saw a thickening of the temporal pole and a thinning of the anterior cingulate cortex. So a bit mixed.
Yeah, but that's interesting. Mm. So, but I have to ask, because I think about this often, and of course you're dealing with an aging population, is do they have grandchildren?
Yeah, not sure. It's one of those tricky things about borrowing data. They didn't ask the questions that I wish they did.
Yeah.
There's lots of data that we just didn't have. It would be so, so amazing to know, particularly grandparenthood.
Yeah, I think grandparenthood is another, well, a whole area of research that hasn't been investigated very much, but I would be very curious to see how that might be related to the brain changes.
Yeah, I mean, we see research on grandparenthood from a more socio-affective viewpoint, in that grandparents who are surrounded by children are happier generally. Yeah. They're more socially active, and just that it seems to be a good thing for their lives. But it would be a wonderful, you know, field of research to know if it's a good thing for their brains.
Yeah, for sure. It would be really interesting. But so, and then you oh, I had another question, sorry, about the So I had a question about the grandchildren, but also about, did it matter whether or not it was, they had like male or female offspring?
Yeah, again, we didn't know. So they only asked, how many children do you have? And so we sort of, unfortunately, don't have data on, you know, attachment, the sex of the baby, birth and feeding methods, you know, so on and so forth. And many of these factors, you know, we know that they impact maternal neuroplasticity. They're really important questions to ask. And sort of difficult with data that you didn't collect with this particular aim in mind.
Yeah, no, definitely. But I think it's fascinating that regardless, you see such interesting and striking effects in this aged population that has lasted for how many years, probably 50 years after they had kids.
I suppose, it is that the flip side of that limitation is that we do see these effects so strongly, even without controlling for all of this other, you know, all of these other factors. So, you know, you could imagine that if we did have this data, that we could find maybe even more.
Yeah, like as I'm thinking, you know, as you mentioned probably already, or at least in your paper, like whether or not they adopted, how involved they are with their kids or grandkids, and all, you know, there's so many questions that could be answered. But regardless of all of that, you still found such interesting results speaking to the longevity of the effects of parenting on the brain.
Yeah, we're pretty happy with it as a really solid first start. You know, I think this is an area that requires more research. You know, we need to look further and see what else is there, and all of these other factors, you know, attachment, grandparenthood.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's so much to know. I do have one question about the memory, though, because I've heard, and I haven't kept up with this aging literature, but that is there not some literature out there showing that women who have more children often have some declines in memory as well?
Yeah, that's right. So we do see this really interesting relationship between motherhood and Alzheimer's disease, particularly, where women with more children have higher rates of Alzheimer's disease and show an earlier disease onset. But there's also other evidence that shows that the more months of pregnancy that you've had over your lifetime is associated with a reduced risk of Alzheimer's disease. So it seems to be somewhat of a complex relationship, and some of a difference between studying lifetime hormonal exposure. So studies focused on the age of menopause, number of pregnancies, sex steroid exposure, compared to studies focusing on the number of children raised. And we know that there's a genetic component to hormonal exposure.
Okay.
So it starts to get a little bit complicated to tease apart what is a biological effect and what is a social, environmental, experiential effect of having children.
Yeah, I mean, it's complex, right?
It is. It's a bit, yeah, it's a bit more complex than having children is good or bad for your brain. I think there's some interaction with our underlying biology as well.
Of course, with our environment and culture. And yeah, I mean, there's so many factors, even just going from your immediate environment to, the town you live in, the area, the region, the economy, what's it based on, and it can all affect your environment and how you live, essentially. So I imagine when you're looking at, I mean, someone when they're 70 or 80 years old, they've been exposed to a number of different things that are interesting to think about as well.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, but I like this idea that you mentioned that the number of months pregnant or the hormone profile across your lifespan is also related to your memory later in life, particularly in women.
Yeah, it seems that way.
Yeah, and it's not just having kids or not having kids. I know I talked about this a bit with Dr. Lisa Galea, who is my PhD supervisor. So we were joking on a previous episode about whether having kids was a good thing or a bad thing.
Yeah.
But it was too late for us now. But essentially, I think there's just so much we don't know still. And we haven't, you know, there's a few studies, but there's not enough to really make a definite link between, I guess, having children and what it's doing to our brains later on in life, for sure.
Right. We still have a lot to learn, I think. I think we're still characterizing those early changes. You know, what is happening? And then we'll be able to say later, what does that mean? And what does that mean long term?
Yeah, definitely. So now you also very recently had another paper accepted.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, so maybe you can tell us about that or how it builds on this research we were just talking about.
Yeah, they very much go together, which is lovely. So in the same sample, we were looking at brain function. So we're looking at resting state fMRI, so brain activation over time.
So maybe you can just explain that a little bit, what the resting state...
Yeah, for sure. So I suppose if we can think of MRI as a photo, we can think of fMRI as a movie. So as you're lying in the scanner, we're looking at what the brain is doing over time and how changes in blood flow, we can interpret changes in blood flow as changes in brain activation.
Okay.
When we're doing that at rest or in resting state, that means we're just lying in the scanner. We're not undergoing any particular task. We're trying to get, I suppose you can think of it as a baseline for the brain. It's resting state.
Yeah, that's perfect.
So what I was looking at is functional connectivity, or how similar two different regions of the brain, how similar their activation is over time at rest. And what we've found was patterns of brain changes that were in the opposite direction from what we would expect to see in age-related decline. So, or put it another way, as the more children a woman had, the more younger her patterns of brain activation were, which is really interesting.
And how do you know that they were younger?
Yeah, so we looked at three different patterns of age-related functional change, and then we saw whether those patterns were evident in our mothers and whether they had some relationship with the number of children a woman had raised. So as the brain ages, our patterns of activation change, and generally we increase the activation of one region to compensate for another. And we showed three different patterns of this sort of compensation that decrease in mothers with more children.
Okay, and so these are these 70 plus aged moms.
Yep, yeah.
And then you are looking at different brain areas and you show that basically their activity is more similar to what you would see in younger women.
In younger brains, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So we've sort of interpreted these results as a neuroprotective effect of parenthood on the aging human brain, which fits really nicely with our structural results as well, particularly the improved cognition.
Yeah.
So together like we can see the structure and the function and the cognition all together supporting this idea of a neuroprotected brain, a resilient aging brain.
Yeah, that's super cool. So it's like 70 if your mom is like, what, the new 50?
Yeah, depends how many kids you've got, I guess.
Yeah, and maybe when they moved out of the house, maybe that's it. I don't know.
Well, no, I mean, we really don't know whether these are late life changes or whether they're changes that happen in pregnancy and the postpartum that are sustained. So because we only looked in this one time period, no, it's not a longitudinal study where we track these people for years and years, though that would be amazing. It's really hard to tell whether what we do see is just telling us about their aging state or whether this is how it's been for years and years and years.
Yeah, no, it would be great to do a longitudinal study on this.
But yeah, it will take.
Maybe that's something you can 40 start. Years.
Yeah, I might start now and I'll be finished when I'm gray.
Yeah, hope for the best. Yeah. Gosh. No, but it's really interesting. And I, like you said, I mean, there's obviously a link with having children and these brain changes. So whether or not it has to do with like how that's working or the mechanism behind that or the experience or whatever is going on, we don't know, but we know that there is this link you show. So that's, I mean, it's fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And it is hard to know what that effect is from, you know, is it hormonal from pregnancy? Is it environmental from, you know, the childcare? But I think the endurance of these effects speaks to the environmental impact of this time period and how permanently it changes your life and your experience. Because the hormone exposure happened, you know, 3 or 4 decades earlier. Yeah. But this environmental complexity endures across the entire parenting experience, indeed the entire life, and only gets more and more complex with an increasing number of children. So we can sort of think about parenthood as a learning experience. We know from rodent models that the brains of rats who are reared in a more complex environment have healthier brains. And I think it's an interesting way to look at parenthood as a more complex environment, as sort of a brain training, you know, in that we have to rise to the challenge of a more complicated life, and that's actually beneficial in the long run.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Yeah.
As I'm doing this, especially during, you know, as all of us parents who are been or have been in lockdown with our children over this past few months also at some point. It's been really fun. But no, I totally agree that there's something special about this essentially enriched environment. And it's also special because it's not that you just have kids around you that are you're kind of having relationships with. They're actually ones you're raising, so I think there's also that special investment in your children who you care about. But it's really
and they're growing and developing as well. I think this is something we often forget, is that the children change and their needs change and their abilities change, and you have to constantly adapt to their changing needs and change your behaviors. So you sort of think like, oh yes, I've done the baby bit.
Yeah.
But it keeps you on your toes.
Yeah, and I once spoke with someone a while back, and they mentioned something like this. So they said, but parenting is really just important in like the first year or so. And then after that, it's not like as intensive. And I always say, well, obviously once a parent, always a parent.
Yeah, but, right.
But there is a constant, kind of a constant change. And that's the constant of parenting, is that it's changing. You're adapting, your child's developing, you're developing as a parent. There's new things. What happened yesterday probably isn't going to work today, or, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You know, how often do you hear somebody say, oh, I just figured out how to soothe her or feed her, and then it changed.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah.
As soon as you think you've got it, they grow up.
Yeah, and then I find, you know, at each stage there's something different, and then moving into the teenage years, which I don't have teenagers yet, but that's a new way of interacting with your child and developing as a parent as well, and helping them to develop their independence and so forth. And I think throughout life, you're always parenting in some way. And I call my mom probably almost every day. So
yeah,
right.
Yeah. And then you've got more than one child, perhaps, you know, at different life stages. So you're having to flip between, you know, maybe parenting a teenager and parenting a tween, and what that is at the same time.
Yeah. So, or like what happens when I talk to my mom as my sister, or my brother, or my other brother is also trying to call her.
Yeah.
So there's just like an extra overload.
Well, yeah, competing needs.
Yeah, competing needs, definitely.
And I think that's one of the areas that hasn't been studied very much. I think this is because we're still, you know, it's a field in its infancy. We're trying to characterize the maternal, paternal brains cleanly. You know, we're just doing first-time parents. We're really trying to keep it as controlled as possible. But then, you know, the next steps are, well, what about having multiple children? What is this, you know, one effect that goes back to normal? Is it something that continues? How is it impacted, compounded, whatever else?
Yeah,
with additional kids.
Well, it's nice to see that your research shows, at least in aging with additional kids, there seems to be some sort of improvements in your brain. So that's promising for mothers.
It is.
But what about dads then, in terms of this function that you looked at, the connectivity?
So we did the same analysis in the fathers, but they didn't have any significant results. So I think, similarly to our structural results, it's all in mothers in this cohort. You know, there's a huge caveat on that. It's not that this is only a mother thing. It's just that we've only found effects in mothers in this particular generation of aged women. And the next generation could be entirely different.
Yeah, and this generation, I mean, they're the generation that were often the stay-at-home moms. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say
Yeah.
that the gender difference in, well, it's a more traditional caregiving arrangement, which exists very differently these days. So yeah, it'll be really interesting to see the effects on fathers who have had more involvement with their kids.
Yeah, definitely. Really interesting. So, now what's next for your research in this area?
Yeah, well, I'm sort of changing tack a little bit and moving away from the late life parental brain, and looking at brain changes in the first year postpartum. So I'm running at the moment what I call the NAPI study. So it stands for Neural Adaptations of the Postpartum Year. And I'm trying to see how the brains of mothers differ from women who have never been pregnant and how these differences relate to cognition and mental health in the postpartum, so baby brain and postnatal depression, anxiety.
Oh, perfect. I think that's also a very important area of research.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what comes out of it. Like we were saying before, blending cognition and neuroscience and mental health and neuroscience, it's important to try and get a whole picture of what's going on. So we've got fairly extensive cognitive tests to see, whether there are deficits still existing at a year postpartum, or whether they've recovered or indeed enhanced. And as well to see if the brain changes are related in any way to postnatal depression and anxiety, because we know that the brain changes are supporting a successful or healthy adaptation to motherhood. So perhaps if the brain is not changing in the way that it quote unquote should, is that producing a vulnerability to a poor transition in that time?
And I think there's also this link between memory and mood, or to some degree, that also hasn't been fully investigated in the postpartum period or during pregnancy. And not that everyone who's forgetting when they're pregnant also has depression, but there's a link there with severe memory impairment and increased mood symptoms that hasn't really been investigated that well, especially in terms of neuroscience. So it's great to hear that you've taken on this additional challenge.
Yeah, trying to tie them all together. And I think particularly sleep is an important aspect for both cognition and mood.
Yeah, but sleep doesn't always come out as a factor.
No, but it also isn't always looked for. In a lot of the cognitive research, I'm shocked when they're not controlling for sleep deprivation.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a big thing, sleep, but also how many things you want to get done during a day. Because I feel that sometimes we want to do 1,000 things when our baby is like 2 months old or 1 month or whatever, 2 weeks, who knows? But we just maybe aren't meant to do 1,000 things except for to just take care of the baby and ourselves. And so I guess this to some degree comes up with, your cognitive load or how much you have to do can also affect how you're feeling and your mental, as well as your memory state, essentially.
I think that's a really good point in sort of what we expect ourselves to be able to do. We sort of say before the baby, I had 10 things to remember and I remembered all 10 things. Yay, go me, that's 100%. And now I've got a baby and I've got 20 things to remember and I remember 10 things. Oh no, that's 50%. Where really, you could be operating at the same level, but because there's that much more to do or that much more expectation of yourself, you actually perceive a decline where there might not be one.
Yeah, I think it's a really complex kind of thing to investigate, and getting at it. Yeah, there's so many different things going on. So trying to understand what exactly is going on in terms of memory and how that changes during pregnancy, or even, across from before you got pregnant to pregnant and then postpartum, that would be also really, really interesting to do research on. But definitely being a parent, particularly a mom who's often the primary caregiver, is complicated. It has a lot of stuff that, that comes with it, but it's super fun as well, speaking from experience. And but yeah, there's so much we don't need to, we there's so much that we don't know. And I think it's great to hear that you're going to do some more research, particularly in moms postpartum and their brain health in relation to their mental health as well as memory. That's very cool.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm excited about it.
So I guess a question I like to ask everybody is, what in general would you like to see answered in terms of parental brain research?
I think we've touched on it a couple of times throughout our chat, but just that difference between the impact of hormones and the impact of caregiving. I think it's really interesting to see how the brain changes, but in the absence of one or the other. So it would be really interesting to see the impact of, say, hormones in the absence of childcare. So in the case of infant loss or surrogacy or adoption. And on the flip side, having a childcare experience in the absence of pregnancy hormones. So fathers, non-birth giving mothers, parents who have adopted, people who work in childcare, to sort of tease apart these impacts and what makes a parent.
I think those are great questions. And I think really, really important ones as well, to see the impact of these different stages of reproduction and whether or not they're continued, or how they're continued, and how they might impact you as a person, and also your brain development, whether or not you're parenting or not.
Yeah,
Very
exactly.
cool. Yeah. So what's the take home for parents out there in terms of their brain function? What would you tell them based on your research?
I would tell them that their brain is changing to adapt to a life stage, and that these adaptive changes support the transition to parenthood and beyond. And I think it would be so lovely if we could view these changes as adaptive and normal and helpful, and to not be scared of them, and to not think that we're going crazy or changing in some way that is maladaptive. If we can, yeah, reframe it as, and really, really embrace these changes as something that supports us.
Yeah, it well said, because I think there's such a stigma with our brain changes across pregnancy and postpartum, and that when we talk about like mommy brain is a cognitive deficit essentially. That's what the word means, but in what is really going on is a change that's important to make you a mom, and so you're learning all these fantastic new things.
Yeah, if
Yeah.
we can think about the transition to parenthood as a developmental stage for parents themselves, that would be amazing.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Very cool. Well, thank you, Winnie, for chatting with me today.
Thank you,
It's
Jodie.
been yeah, it's been a pleasure. I really love your area of research. I love this aging brain, parenting and the aging brain, but also that you're adding to the story that we need to develop along postpartum mental health and memory. So, and the brain, of course. So this is really great.
Thank you so much.
Questions, comments, suggestions, get in touch at Mommy Brain Revisited on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. You can also contact me on my website at jodipaluski.com. That's JODIPAWLUSKI.com. Looking forward to hearing from you.
Pulling and pushing away, still better than yoga. Soundstripe.